Hello and welcome to Wellness with Liz Earle. And today I am truly delighted to be joined by serial well-being and beauty entrepreneur Marcia Kilgore, a lady who has launched not one, but five brilliant brands. Marcia has founded Bliss, Flip Flop, Soap and Glory, Sopa Dupa, and of course, the latest one, Beauty Pie. A true business guru, and that, as you know, is not a word I ever use lightly. She's also a genuine beauty expert, and we'll be chatting later about the secrets to her amazing skin I'm sitting beside. Marcia, welcome. It's so lovely to have you here.
Thank you very much, and thank you for having me here.
Oh, thank you for making the time, because you are based in Switzerland now, is that right?
Yes, I go back and forth between Switzerland and London, and sometimes New York, and wherever else I need
wherever.
To be.
Well, I follow you on Instagram, and I know that you are all over the place. It's great to have you here in my wellbeing studios. But I want to go right back to the beginning, where, as we get started now, to really find out where it all started for you, because I mentioned all those great brands which anybody who's anybody in the beauty business will know and admire. Where did it come from for you?
You know, I think that in my DNA somewhere is the need to make women feel happier. I think when I was younger, my mom, I could see her struggle quite a lot because I had quite a difficult childhood growing up, and my father died quite early. And there was something about living in a family with all girls where I guess the lead was perhaps struggling and perhaps needing a bit of cheering up. And it was something that I wanted to create things for her and create experiences for her that made her a happy person.
Were you the eldest? Because they say that often the eldest leads.
I was the youngest.
Oh, wow. Interesting.
Yes, and my two older sisters, I think maybe perhaps weren't as perceptive or maybe didn't require what I required in terms of positivity in my daily surroundings. So you create it, don't you?
You certainly do. And this was in Canada. Is that your accent that I'm picking up?
Yes. I grew up in both a mixture of Calgary, which is in Alberta, and Saskatchewan, which is above North Dakota. And if you've ever seen the movie Fargo.
Yes, indeed.
Just imagine 600 miles north.
And north
that's why,
of Fargo.
Yes,
okay.
And that's why I got out.
Okay. Now, you got out and you didn't, as one might expect listening to your CV, go to Harvard, do an MBA, become a kind of business entrepreneur. You started very practically, didn't you?
I did start very practically. In fact, though, I had written the SATs, which isn't something that normal Canadian students do, when I was in 12th grade. And I did get accepted to Columbia University. And it was just when they were starting to accept women, believe it or not. And I'm not even that old, so that's shocking to think that Columbia didn't take women because women went to Barnard. So the first year that they took women, I was accepted. And my sister, who was living in New York at the time, told me, if you get accepted, I will pay your tuition. And so I got accepted and I showed up in New York. And she, unfortunately, had some tax issues that year.
Oh, no. Okay.
So I was sort of too late to apply for a student loan because I was a foreign student. And I kind of just had to wing it.
So what did you do?
Well, I thought, why is this happening for me?
Okay, that's interesting. That's something, that's one of your mottos, isn't it? Why is it happening for me and not to me?
Yes.
You're not the victim here.
No, I am trying to think of the gift that comes with every situation and every struggle so that you can learn from it and grow stronger muscles and then learn how to overcome it. Should it happen again? Hopefully not.
But there was clearly a gift here because it was the gift of business. And
yes, learning how to struggle and make it work and do everything and roll up your sleeves and figure it out. And so there I was in New York. I had $300. My mother had given me for my graduation present a backpack that was luggage. And I don't think she was thinking, I'm making a statement here. I was thinking, maybe, you know, she thought it was a practical item and I could probably use it if I wanted to go somewhere and not get out of my house.
Yeah, no, my girlfriend got a suitcase for her 21st.
But I was quite a well-behaved teenager and I did quite well at school and I didn't, you know, party all night or cause problems. But I think she was just done by the time her third girl, you know, was 18. She was done raising us by herself. So I got to New York. I had my $300, which I had saved. And at the beginning, I was living with my sister. And I just had to figure out, I couldn't live with my sister long term. We have one of those relationships that's just difficult because we're two very different people. Mm. And I just wanted to have, I think, more free existence. So I had to figure out how to make enough money to pay my own rent, which when you're 18 and you're in New York and, you know, the cheapest studio you can find is maybe $600 a month, was still a lot of money.
Significant.
Yeah. So I had to use the skills that I had to to make it work. And at the time, I was a bodybuilder in Canada as my hobby.
Oh,
and I know that's
goodness.
A bit strange.
Really?
But there wasn't much else to do growing up in Saskatoon, Saskatchewan that wasn't about drinking. Right?
Okay. So you were lifting weights?
I was lifting weights and I won a couple of bodybuilding titles. And
do you have pictures?
I have a few. Yeah, I have
you
a few.
You need to share.
I'll say it's depressing when I look at them now. The state of my abs back then was quite fantastic. And now maybe not the same. But
you look epic.
You can at least, you know.
Mm-hmm. I can picture the scene.
Yeah, it was
so did you start
something.
To train others? Is that what happened?
I started to train others. Okay. And for $15 an hour, I had the, you know, kind of a who's who of the fashion world and the film world back then, because there were a couple of gyms, one on East 92nd Street and one on East 21st Street. I was downtown, so I went to the one on East 21st Street. And it was really before gyms got going. Mm. You know, there was no Equinox back then. There were no Crunches or any of the big gym chains. There was no SoulCycle. It was Better Bodies, and it was a tiny, sweaty, real bodybuilder's gym on East 21st Street. Jean-Claude Van Damme was in there.
Extraordinary.
It was fun.
So when did the beauty kick in then?
Well, I started to be a personal trainer because that's how I could make money and that's what I knew. And so I started to, between trying to save money so that I could go to school part-time, which I eventually did, and trying to do personal training so that I could, you know, make this money and then go to school. And, you know, it got kind of exhausting. Mm. So I would wake up at 6 o'clock in the morning, go to a session as a personal trainer, then run to NYU, take an economics class, then go to a session somewhere else. And it was all over Manhattan. So I was up and down. And by, you know, 2 years later, my skin was just a disaster. And it had always been quite oily. But when you don't have time to keep your face clean, it's very humid. You're oily by, you know, by nature. It was quite tough. So one summer, I decided that I would go to Christine Valmy and take a crash course in how to do facials instead of going with one of my wealthier clients to the Hamptons and hanging out in the Hamptons and taking them jogging from time to time. So I learned how to give facials, and I learned about anatomy and physiology of the skin, and I learned about some, you know, basic ingredients. Because back then, right, which was probably 1989, 1990, you know, cosmetics
seems
were
very different.
Very different. Yeah. Yeah. And you didn't have peptides, and you didn't even have alpha hydroxy acids, right?
No.
The only kind of peel you had back then was probably an enzymatic, papaya.
Yes, yeah, right? Good old AHAs.
Yeah. Yep. So, you know, I learned how to do facials, and then I realized, you know, I don't think I can run around for the rest of my life doing personal training sessions, because I literally would go to a client's house and take them for a 9-mile run. And then I'd go to the next client's house and run them up and down the stairs in their building and then do some yoga. And then I would go to my, and it was tiring. But I thought I could give facials more than one time a day. I could probably give 8 facials a day and still go to NYU and not fall asleep during my classes, because they were quite expensive. And I didn't want to pay all this money in tuition and fall asleep, which was happening sometimes when I was, you know, trying to juggle the personal training job at the same time. So I started to give, I was still doing personal training, still going to school part-time, and then I started to do facials. And slowly, gradually, more and more people started to come in and have facials so I could give up some of the personal training. And I think probably until 1996, I still got up at 7 o'clock in the morning. Actually, I got up at 6 to be at 7 o'clock in the morning at my favorite personal training client. But I gave up all of the rest of them. And then eventually when I opened Bliss, I kind of had to just say.
So opening Bliss, you know, you really made beauty salons cool, didn't you? Because back in the day, the beauty salon was, it was quite
punitive.
Yeah, it was. It was sort of rubber massage belts and electronic current.
And shame.
Yeah.
It was a lot
extraction
of shame. Yes.
And just, it wasn't a pampering experience that it is now. It's not that wonderful day spa. So.
Yeah, it wasn't making you feel good about yourself or feel happy or feel
empowered.
So that
the concept of Bliss, I mean, the very word says it, doesn't it?
Yes, exactly. That's exactly what I wanted to give people. Create a place where they could go. Our tagline then was that you don't have to leave town to get away. And it was about being in the middle of this hectic, you know, city. And being able to go somewhere and have this little respite where you forgot where you were as if you'd been on vacation and leave feeling blissful.
And then from there, the products followed. Was that always your idea that you would then have a line?
Yeah, no, it wasn't. So we had very luckily, and I'm still grateful for this, you know, the power of the media, right as I was about to open Bliss, probably 2 or 3 months before, American Vogue had done a story about a face cream that I sold and actually imported, which was an oxygen cream, and put it next to an Irving Penn photo and called it Cult Creams. And suddenly the entire world started to call to buy this cream.
That's just such a moment, isn't it, when that happens?
I don't think to this day I've ever seen anything quite like that, because the rush of people and also the length of time that it continued, where this was the day of answering machines, right?
I was going to say, before internet, before online.
There was no online ordering going on. This was, you know, you'd leave a message. So we would leave the spa at 9 o'clock at night, having packed boxes in between giving facials. Not that there was any time, but the receptionist would be packing the boxes because we didn't plan for this. There was nowhere to do it. And between 9 o'clock and 7:30 the next morning, or 8 o'clock, there would be hundreds of messages on the answering machine from other, you know, other cities, people all over America trying to order this face cream. And literally that article probably paid for 75% of the build out of Bliss, which opened in July of that year.
So did you think, right, this is obviously there's something in this cream, and or in creams general?
Yeah, it was really something great, like, in Vogue. Yeah. I mean, it was a great cream.
Yeah.
Is it the best technology today? No. Was it? It was incredible technology back then.
Yeah.
Would I use it on my face today as my cream? No.
No, well, we will definitely get onto what you're using on your face, because, well, you'll see. I mean, we will have podcast notes online after this so that people can go and see exactly how gorgeous you do look. But moving on from Bliss, when did Fit Flop happen? Because that was that the next chronological business that you built?
No, the next chronological one was Soap and Glory.
Was it?
Yes. So I launched...
So you sold Bliss, is that right?
I sold Bliss in... Okay, so in two parts. Mm. I sold Bliss in 70% of it to LVMH in 1999. It was a crazy time in the 90s.
It was. Yeah, and, I remember it well.
Yeah, there were so many great brands that started, right? It was as if there was an alignment of the planets.
Completely.
Which I really believe in. And our mutual friend, Kathy.
Kathy Phillips.
Yes.
Yeah, with This
she
Works.
She would absolutely bring you some chart that would tell you, this is going to be a big year. And she absolutely believes it, but is an intellectual.
Yeah.
But she knows there is something.
So many great
alignment.
Beauty brands started. I mean, I remember when Lizelle Beauty Company started in 95,
you know,
and then we've got Bobbi Brown and MAC.
Time.
And, you know, there's a lot of lot of great brands happening.
Yeah, and Kate Spade
started
then. There were so many gyms, so Crunch.
Yeah.
Right? Equinox started at that time. I mean, you could go back and name probably 100 things that are still here today that started then, right?
Yeah.
Whole Foods, Gourmet Garage, all of those sort of New York institutions. I'll start it. And a lot of things come and go, but there must have been something very, you know, the alignment of the plants with longevity.
So you sold 70%, you kept 30%.
To LVMH,
was that the idea that you were going to stay in?
Yes, I was going to stay in. And, you know, I didn't really know. I mean, I'd never sold a business before. I didn't know if it would be great to be owned by them or not great. I didn't know, you know, I thought this will really help because we don't have any money. Because, you know,
what you put happens, everything into the brand.
Everything. Yeah, and then you expand because, so we opened 15 treatment rooms and we were still in debt to the construction guy. So the contractor, he told me, we can stretch this. We can probably not pay them until November. I didn't have a dime when we first opened, but we managed to pay them back on time. But I didn't take a loan or anything like that. And so 3 years in, we thought when we would expand, it would be great. The waiting list would be eased up. No problem. We were open for a month at Bliss, the bigger version with the 12 treatment rooms, and we were already booked for 9 months. So then people started to get angry that they couldn't get in.
Yes.
So we thought, we got to expand. So the floor above us was coming up for rent. So 3 years later, or it was either 2 or 3 years later, we opened another floor. So we had 24 treatment rooms upstairs, and then we had to build a staircase and build out the whole upstairs. So once again, every dime had gone into upstairs. And then you've got tax to pay because, of course, you've built this stuff and you have to pay tax
and
on your investment.
And people to pay and, endless.
Yeah, it was endless. Mm-hmm. And so someone comes along offering you money and you just think, it would be nice to get off this treadmill of owing money all the time and maybe actually think, I can go...
Go and breathe.
Yeah.
And do
and
something.
Maybe go shop for a weekend and not worry about it. So... It seemed they came with an offer of 70%. Mm-hmm. I thought, that sounds great. Who's going to you know, you're not going to argue, really, no. Especially when you're 28 years old and
28.
Yes, gosh. 28. And so, and they were really, and probably still are, the world's leading luxury brand conglomerate.
Yeah, they have a great reputation.
They do. So we sold to them, and I stayed for 5 years. Mm. And then the business, so this was after 2001. Actually, LVMH decided they didn't want that many beauty companies, although they had, then they started Sephora. Mm-hmm. But in terms of individual brands, they were going to stay kind of with Guerlain and things that were associated with their fashion houses, which makes sense, actually. Yeah, what were they doing buying us anyway? We were just hot.
Well, we were hot at the time.
And I think Bernard Arnault's daughter really loved us. Okay. And it was like, she thinks it's cool. Let's go buy it. And I was on the receiving end, you know, very happy.
Yeah.
And so they then sold our business, their shares, and I sold my shares to Starwood Hotel.
Right. Who still have it?
No.
No?
So, Bliss, you know, I've been out of it since 2004, and it has changed hands a few times, but I will say it was sold to LVMH, the biggest luxury group. Mm. Then it was sold to Starwood Hotels, the world's largest hotel group, mm-hmm. so that wasn't bad.
No, not at all.
Then it was sold to, I think, Elemis? Or Steiner Leisure,
okay,
the world's
yes.
largest leisure...
On cruise ships.
Yes.
Yeah.
Then it was recently sold back to El Capitan, which is LVMH's investment small projects arm.
Interesting. Come full circle.
Right?
So you then went from there to found this really funky brand,
Soap and Glory. Glory.
So
yes.
What led you to do that? What inspired you? Having been... I mean, Billis was already pretty cool.
Yes. Yeah.
So why did you want to go and do something
again? You know, at the time, I was having children. So I had my first son and I was planning to have another one. And I wanted to have a balanced existence. And I had met with somebody once from, I think he worked at the time for MAC and has since gone up the ranks in Estee Lauder. And I remember him saying, just do products. Don't do people. Do products. Yeah. It's much easier to just sell products and don't deal with staff.
And I will say that... And of course, you had all those therapists. So you knew all about service...
Yeah, it's a lot, isn't it? I mean, I love clients and I love service, and I find it to be, it's a beautiful community. So you actually create this family around you when your clients and your customers kind of become your family.
Sure.
And then there's the labyrinth of negotiating customer service and just trying to make everybody happy. But dealing with staff, you know, the manicurists and the massage therapists, and they're very artistic in a way.
Yeah.
So... It was a challenge and it was a lot of work. And I wanted to have my own children, not those children.
Okay, fair enough, yes.
And so I thought, if I eliminate the children from this, I do have just the products left. Mm. So I want to have my own children and then I'll just sell products.
And what was the theory behind Soap and Glory? What was your mission
there? It was really the best bang for your beauty budget. Right. So what can you make that could be sold, you know, at retail and in mass market or what I would call mastige, that was still a really great designer level product in terms of how it smelled, how it felt. It wouldn't necessarily be expensive ingredients. We didn't necessarily have high tech products, but you got a lot of bang for your buck. Yeah. So big things of shower gel, you know, fun. Mm. It was fun to interact with. And it was really high quality for the price point.
And it's interesting that word mastige, and that's a space that I'm familiar with in beauty. And for anybody listening who's not come across that term, it's the combination of mass market and prestige, which historically have been two very separate parts of a beauty business. And then this merging together with brands like Soap and Glory, and to an extent, L'Oréal Beauty as well. It's sort of mastige. You've got premium.
I think yours was more tige.
Tige than
Mine
the mass.
Mine was more mass.
And of course, you ended up selling that brand to Boots. Is that
yes,
right?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. And you stayed in for a bit?
No.
You went completely.
I did.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love it at the time, and I love the community that it builds, and my staff.
Yeah.
But I am really an independent.
Yeah.
I think I'm quite an independent thinker, and I'm not very good with large corporations.
Yeah, it's a very different game, isn't it?
Yeah.
So where does FitFlop fit into that? That's a bit of a tongue twister.
Yes, well done. Well done.
So tell me about that, because that's a really amazing, you know, to go from beauty to footwear.
Yes. Well, you know, someone said to me once that the limits to the beauty industry are really in our imaginations. And it was actually Neil Fiske who wrote this book called Trading Up. And he was a Bain Capital consultant or something like that, who ended up at one point working for Bath & Body Works. And I remember watching a speech of his where he said that, and it really resonated with me, because I thought, wait a second, he's right. Beauty products aren't just things that make you look good on the outside, or that you, you know, shampoo your hair with. It can actually also be something that makes you walk taller or feel better or have more energy. And so that opened my mind up to the possibility of thinking of different items, because I'm certainly a beauty product girl. I would never think of myself as a footwear person back then, but now...
You're wearing very funky shoes, I have to say.
Those are the newest slip-on.
They're sort of glittery, pull-on, trainery things.
Incredibly ergonomic, and you just bounce down the street in these things. I have to get you some to try.
Totally. Well, I love the glitter. I love the styling. The fact that you've brought kind of funk into functionality and, as you say, ergonomic.
The funk in functionality.
Whoa. You can have that line.
Thank you. Whoa, so you don't stop, do you?
So you're still doing flip-flop, is that right?
I still have flip-flop, okay. But I have a whole team that runs it who are much better at it than I am. So I came up with the idea, right? I wanted to have a shoe.
It's a great name, again, Fit-Flop. You know, all your names are really cool.
Well, that's the actually, it's usually the pun that starts the idea. Mm. And same with, you know, Beauty Pie. It was the idea of getting a bigger piece of the pie that then started... How do we then make this work? And it all just rolls usually out of the pun.
Well, that's of course the latest one, but in between all that we have yet another brand.
Yes,
which is Super Duper.
Super Duper.
Super Duper. I'm
well,
so sorry.
Soap.
So,
yes.
So tell me the story behind Super Duper.
So after I had given, you know, Soap and Glory over to Boots, and they took the baby and, you know, ran with it. I decided that I would take everything that I'd learned in the industry of masstige bath and body products and try knowing what the zeitgeist is and knowing what we should responsibly be doing for the environment with our products and do it right. So first put the checklist together, because I'd never before sat back and said, all right, what do we want to make sure is true before we launch this product, and for the zeitgeist as well, because we know that plastic is a big problem, right? We know that we're starting to pollute the water table with some of the ingredients that are being washed down the down our drains. We know that plastic in the oceans is a big product or problem, I'm sorry. And even microplastics, not even the microbeads, but just the...
Even the films, everything, the micros.
Yes, yeah. I mean, fibers in mascara, right? If you wash them down the drain in lengthening mascaras, they're going to end up in the water supply because they don't necessarily get filtered out. So all of these problems that we haven't thought about, and trying to actually create a brand that was, again, putting the funk in functionality. If I'm going to steal that, I'll
Please
steal it
do.
Right now.
It's yours.
Thank you. And try and do something that is entertaining and fun and lovable. And you've got the wall of sound so that people instantly recognize it. But at the same time, we do a lot of good by doing a lot of business. So A, we recycle plastic because our bottles and our jars are 100% recycled plastic. We're still working on the pumps. Because we found a recyclable pump. Now, we've asked the pump supplier if they can do the fully recyclable pump in post-consumer recycled plastic, because they have a recyclable pump, but it's not out of recycled plastic.
Okay.
So we're challenging them to raise the bar even further. So we've done that in terms of our packaging, made it very simple. So it's big and, you know, large sizes so that you don't use as much packaging.
Economical.
Yeah.
And what about ingredients? How do you formulate them?
Everything is biodegradable, although we don't pay for the stamp. So in order to have biodegradable stamped on your product, you have to pay.
It's such a tricky thing, isn't it? That whole thing of certification.
Yes.
And actually, if you know that you're doing it yourself and you can communicate that to the customer and they trust you.
Yes.
Actually, you don't necessarily always need that external audit.
Yes, because also it costs you money. And
that's a
also,
business. I mean, the certification bodies are businesses at the end of the day.
And you pay every year, no matter what you sell. And so we're also associated very closely with WaterAid, because we think it's Super Duper, and we think soap and water are very important. And there are so many communities around the world that don't have soap and water. Yeah. Basic access to
I spend a lot of time in East Africa,
you know,
and it's,
yeah.
And what I love about
it. Yes, I followed you on Instagram.
Well, I'm there a lot, and I love taking my children there because they come back so appreciative of the fact that they can turn on a tap.
Yes, the conveniences. Yeah, and we don't, it's not even just a given. Understand, right? How, what a struggle it is. Yeah, and completely. Also lifting the burden for women. So women,
always women. Women go and fetch and carry the water and have to deal with it. And
for miles. Yeah. So they're carrying, you know, buckets of water on their heads for miles, and then they can't go to school. So it's also that love, let's emancipate women here, right? Let's help them. Let's get soap and water to communities who need it. Emancipate women so women can go to school and get their education and rise, right? Because I really believe that women are the power of the world, but we're also a gentle power. And the world needs more gentle power right now.
Absolutely. And I love that. And that's another expression that I love, which I think totally applies to you, is lift others as you rise.
Yeah.
Because we can all just share it.
And, yes, absolutely.
And spread the love, which you're doing. So Super Duper is still yours? You're still involved?
Yeah, we just launched. I mean, it's not even 2 years old yet.
Okay.
So it was October, I think, of 2016 that we launched first in Liberty. And now we're rolling up. But the best place to get it really is on the website.
Okay. And is it going global?
Well, I haven't had time yet to go global.
Well, we haven't had time because you've been very busy doing something else.
Yes.
Which is really possibly the ultimate in beauty industry disruption. And you've been described as kind of the Netflix of the beauty world in terms of changing the whole dynamic of how things are sold. And that is Beauty Pie.
Yes.
It's tell us
about fairy tale,
beauty.
Liz.
Okay.
It's the fairy tale.
This is the one that really your eyes are sparkling.
Well, Liz, I love Super Duper and I love Flip Flop. I mean, I ordered 12 pairs of shoes just a couple of weeks ago. I pretended I needed to wear trial them to make sure that they all fit well. And of course, they all fit well because there's a rigorous process by which they're all tested. But I love all of them in different ways. But
Beauty Pie is a completely different concept.
A different concept.
It is an amazing product range. And if you look in my bathroom here in the studios, you will find Beauty Pie products. But the whole ethos behind it is a very different.
It's, you know, it's when you think about not compromising in your life and getting to the state of your career where you don't want to compromise on anything anymore. Mm-hmm. And what does then that mean? And how would you then roll that out? That for me is Beauty Pie. I've always been very democratic. And what I love the most, I remember once with the Bliss catalog, I used to write the copy myself because I didn't know there were such things as copywriters, and I thought it was actually quite fun until it got huge and there were 80 pages to write every month, and that kind of was...
I know what that feels like.
Yes, it's burdensome. And I was trying to be funny the whole time, so it was super burdensome. And I remember someone writing to me, and it was a girl, a letter, right? Because there wasn't email when we first started it. Or maybe there was, but it was quite rudimentary. So I get this letter from a girl in Boston who had taken... apparently she was a student, and she said, I just wanted to write you a letter because I receive your catalog and I'm a student and I can't afford to buy anything, but I wanted to let you know that I read it on the train to school and it makes me feel really good and I laugh all the way there and it makes my day and I just wanted to let you know. And I remember getting that letter and thinking, this is why I do it.
Yeah.
For that kid who can't afford it, but I am making her day. And so Beauty Pie is really, it's the fairy tale for every woman or every beauty product lover, especially luxury beauty products.
And it's a fairy tale because you sell at cost price.
We sell at cost of goods price to members who pay a membership fee, either monthly or annually. And there are limits to how much you can buy because...
Yeah, you can't go and buy
everything.
Everything,
right?
Because that wouldn't be fair.
Yeah, or it would be like... You can have one Spotify membership that works on everybody in your cities, you know, they wouldn't be able to function. So we've worked it out where, and you'll know this also probably from your days, by the time the retailer takes that product, it costs 10 times as much as when it left the factory.
Yeah.
Because you have to, and it's nothing bad about brands, right? But they have to give 50% to the retailer.
Yes.
And then you have to give 40% to a distributor. And then there's the overhead. And then there's the shop fit. And then there's all the other things that you have to pay for. And then you have 15% in marketing. And if you don't charge 10 times as much, you can't actually pay your bills.
No.
So people end up buying products for 10 times more than they cost to make. And it used to be that you would align yourself with a brand because it identified you and it made you feel better about yourself. So if you had a certain kind of lipstick with a certain package or a certain brand on it, it identified you almost like a religion. But now in the new age, I really believe that it's your Instagram feed that identifies you. Of course, not everyone has their own magazine. Some of us are just identified by our Instagram feeds, but that's what matters to us, not the brand on our lipstick.
Yeah, yeah.
So if you can have the exact same luxury, Italian, beautiful formula, high quality, beautifully and simply packaged, we package things so that hopefully one day they'll get recycled, because right now there's not a lot
of... It's very hard, isn't it?
It's incredibly hard. But if you could have that same product as the next brand offers, but for a tenth of the price...
Yeah.
Why wouldn't you?
And it is really unbelievable value. But your messaging to say this is literally what the product cost, how has that gone down in the beauty world? Because I imagine there are some seriously unhappy CEOs of major beauty brands.
You know, it's interesting because they've all linked in with me. So I don't, no one has sent me a message.
You haven't been barred from conferences and things?
No, no.
You're not persona non grata. There's Marcia, she can't come in now. She can't be part of our club because she's...
I was worried about it
at the beginning.
Put the
spotlight on pricing, which is such a contentious issue.
I was worried. I thought, you know, when you have that moment like, oh, I can't do this. I can't do this. People are going to really be...
Yeah, but it's
upset.
A different way of buying it. You know, you don't have retail stores.
No.
You don't have... You know, bricks and mortar where people can come and play with products. How do they feel about buying things online? It's tricky buying a lipstick that you haven't actually tested.
Sure. Well, we do as much swatching as we can.
Okay.
You know, so that people can see what this might look like on their skin tone. We put it on models and take pictures of it on different skin tones.
Yeah.
And frankly, if you buy a lipstick and it costs you £2.36 instead of £36, and it doesn't work
for
you,
if it's not exactly the right shade, you give it to a friend.
You kind of don't care.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's kind of great because you can also be Santa Claus for everybody who gets your cast-offs. And then, I mean, where it comes, the huge savings, right, are anti-aging skincare, vitamin C, the real, you know,
well,
high
I've been testing
stuff.
A lot of your retinol products.
Don't you love it?
Well, you know, retinol for me is a new thing. And in fact, we've written about it in the autumn issue of Lizelle Wellbeing, because they've been this sort of strange unknown. I think for me, I think professional beauty therapists have known about it. And you've got the sort of the prescribed doctor products.
Yes.
And because my skin was always very dry and sensitive, I was always very wary. Whereas I've got girlfriends who were acne prone or very oily skin who've grown up on retinol.
Yes.
And their skin, actually, they are remarkably unlined as they've aged, because they started off with a teenage problem that was, you know, product that was given to them for a problem. And they've just carried on and their skin has continued to age really well as a result.
Yes.
So I was really fascinated, and with my team here, we've actually been trialing lots, and I have to say the Beauty Pie ones came out really well.
They're incredible.
And the textures are very good.
Beautiful.
And so where do you get things made?
That particular retinol product and the other, so there are three, there's a serum, a night cream and an eye cream, and they're made in one of my favorite labs in Switzerland.
Really?
Yes.
A lot of good stuff coming out of Switzerland in the beauty, for skincare particularly, high-end skincare.
There's nobody that beats it, really. I don't know what they're doing. You know, it's the planets
align. It's a bit
align.
Of alchemy.
It's the planets aligning at a certain place over
Maybe
Switzerland.
Maybe it's the longitude and latitudinal point. That
it
there must be a ley line running through the Alps, I
and
think, to do with skin.
Super efficient. Right?
I'm sure.
And it's about technology
and
efficiency and texture. And the standards are very high and they're quite serious, right?
Mm.
So that might be it. Whereas the Korean stuff, so Korean skincare will be more kitsch. It's going to be more new. It's going to be a little bit probably newer textures and more bells and whistles.
Okay.
Because that's what Korea is like. And then Japanese skincare is going to be very fine and refined.
And do you
and
buy from
textures.
All these different places? Do you have ingredients and technology?
This is the beauty of the pie.
Okay.
It's so fun, Liz. You can't even
imagine.
Well,
I do follow you on Instagram, and I do love it when I see pictures of your bathroom or your shelf, and you're just surrounded by endless bottles and potions and testing. How do you test it all?
Well, you know, you try something once, and then you can quickly eliminate whether or not, right? And then you bring it down. The things that you tend to reach for every day and finish, those go in.
Totally.
Yeah, so if there's something where you kind of use a bit of it, then you just don't bother.
Meh. Mm-hmm.
It's meh. Well,
okay.
What should, you know?
Yeah.
The beauty of it, And, you know, it's interesting, again, how the beauty industry normally works is you would pick a price for something. You think, well, this cream will sell at about this price. And then you'd work backwards, to create it to make sure that it wasn't more than a tenth or else you can't pay your bills. I don't.
Doesn't matter to you, because whatever it costs is what your people are going to pay.
And if it's £12 versus £12.34 versus £13.17.
It doesn't matter.
It really doesn't, just make the does best. It? You just make the best.
So somebody would buy it for £13.17 rather than buying it for £137.
Yeah. And so, skincare, we know, in, you know, those very high-end skincare brands.
It is
brands,
expensive.
I mean, we have, and I, so also, these labs also often will show this different brands the same thing. So they have collections.
Which is why you get themes coming
all at the same time. Because everybody's doing snow algae at the same time,
yeah,
right? Everybody's doing Jeju.
Remember what's Jeju?
Well, Jeju is an island in South Korea, which is a volcanic island, which has, you know, the volcanic
so like the ash.
And then they also have a lot of aloe and different ingredients that grow on Jeju. And it's known as the purest place in the world.
I must go.
Yes. Well, one lab, you must report on Jeju.
Totally.
And please include our Jeju cream.
I will
and our
take
Jeju
it with
serum,
me. Yes.
Which the Jeju ingredients were picked up by a particular lab, which is an excellent lab in Switzerland. And they presented Jeju to probably quite a lot of brands. And it looks like at one point, every brand picked up these Jeju products, which were very similar. So they might have six, and I'll go in and I will try them. And if I think these are world class, and I would be delighted to pay not only the beauty pie price for them, which might be £11, but the retail, which might be 80.
Yeah.
Then I'll put them in the line. Mm-hmm. And we might end up with two or three products from the six that they show, right? What I think is really the best. Other people might end up with the other three.
Sure.
But it's all the same.
Yeah.
And maybe you change the fragrance.
Yeah, so we do a little tweak.
Maybe.
To personalize it.
Yes.
But, so what are you seeing now that's new? What's really exciting you? Because you must see new things all the time.
We do. There's a lot of different vitamin C's that are coming out, mixtures of vitamin C's.
Are they stable? Can you stabilize them in creams?
You can. There's also freeze-dried vitamin C. We've got encapsulated vitamin C that's amazing.
Okay.
So these little capsules that are 10% stable vitamin C in like a break-open individual use capsule, which is biodegradable.
Perfect.
Because it's made out of algae. So
love
very
it.
Important for us. In a glass jar, so that's also fully recyclable.
Yep.
That hyaluronic acid in different weights together.
That's an interesting
really. So you're moisturizing the outside of the skin and then the second layer, and then you've got one that really deeply penetrates, and that just plumps your face up. So we have capsules of that, and then we also have a 4D hyaluronic acid serum coming from a lab across the lake from the other lab in Switzerland.
So, and do you keep all these things current, or do you discontinue? How does it work if somebody finds a favorite product? Because that's always a great annoyance for me, that you go back to the counter and actually, no, we've got something much better now. We don't do that anymore.
This is the difficult part, because people love newness.
Yeah.
So what we say to people, and we're trying to figure this out, this is something we're navigating, you know, as a pretty new business, people want to buy a lot of something that they like, but we have monthly limits because we can't afford to keep 400 products in stock at all times without any kind of buying limit when you're not paying any markup.
Yes.
Because,
I understand that.
You know, it's just a bit, when you start to do the math, it just doesn't work. So we have to bring certain things in and let go of other things, which is very difficult.
So do you let people know?
No.
Maybe that's the thing. It's
you're
just
right,
to say,
should. What an excellent idea. Could you come in and consult?
We're going to be discontinuing at some point.
Yes,
so for those who love it.
We probably should. Because skincare, for instance, everything has 4.5, 5-star ratings.
Yeah.
But some of them just have to go.
Yeah,
because we need to bring newness.
Make room for the new.
But you don't want to let them go because you know there are people who are loving these things.
Yeah.
So you're right. We should email. Maybe these are going away.
Last chance.
Don't
miss.
But if people have limits and they've already used their limits, then they're going to be, you know. So
well,
we have to do something where we
buy. Oh, yeah, maybe you extend
the limit for
special items. Or
to let them get these additional things.
And do you think other people will follow your model? You're so far ahead in the market doing this.
It's also
do you have
really
on your
hard work.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's quite tough. And I think we're able to do this because I can do so many of these jobs myself.
Yes.
And we're we're not billing me back.
Right.
So this is like my labor. Feeling. Yeah, it's my labor of love. But yes. If they had to hire me.
Yes.
In the 8 different positions that I do.
Yeah.
Then we wouldn't be able to offer these prices.
Yeah.
Because it's just not viable. Mm. Especially for a startup. So we need the breadth of product. Mm-hmm. But then the copy, the marketing, the all of these.
And do you ship
things.
Internationally? I mean, do you see this as a global brand? Is that your vision?
Eventually. So currently we ship in the US and the UK. Mm-hmm. And the UK is our bigger market, interestingly, because I think because we're here.
Yes.
But we do have a warehouse in the US as well. Mm-hmm. It just takes a little bit longer, I think, to penetrate because it's such a huge place. But I remember back in February after we launched, and we launched in December of 2016. Yeah. I remember in February reading a review from somebody who was in something Michigan and thinking, oh, we made it in America. If you can make it to something yes. Michigan by your 3rd month,
yes.
You have infiltrated.
That's good going.
It just lets you know, like, this idea is global.
It has legs and it travels.
And women everywhere will love it. Because if Felicity in whatever Michigan town I have not heard of and I'm well traveled is already on the pie.
Yeah.
This is big. And it's really exciting.
Your excitement is really contagious. It's really infectious. And I think I remember interviewing the late, great Anita Roddick many years ago. And she was this like whirling dervish of massive black curly hair and whizzing around her office down in Littlehampton and would never sit still for a nanosecond. And she turned to me once and I said, how do you do everything you do? Because I was, I don't know, about 22, junior writer. And she said, Liz, she said, passion persuades. You know, if you love what you do, you are just so passionate about it and you will bring people with you. And that gives you the energy to carry on. And, you know, you clearly have the passion.
Oh, I love it.
For beauty.
I love it. And you know, what's so wonderful is there's no compromising. You don't have to fake. There's no faking. Yeah. There's no saying this is worth X when it really cost Y. And being truthful and transparent.
Yeah.
And at the same time, being able to source the best, which is just fun because I get all this stuff kind of for free, although I am a paying member. Believe it. I do. I pay and I experience it like
a customer.
So that you
go through the customer journey. Yeah. Really important.
But it's the fairy tale for them. It's the fairy tale for me. You know, it's how you want to go out. Really.
And then in real life, when the fairy tale comes home, how do you manage this? And I know this is, it's an annoying question because it's a question that nobody asks top senior male executives. You know, how do you juggle?
Yes.
How do you manage to do it
all? Do you have it all? Yes.
But, you know, you are a wife and mum, you have got boys at home. What are your tips and secrets to people thinking, oh my goodness, she, you know, this is a world dominating woman. How does she then manage to bring her own health and well-being and lifestyle back into family life every day?
So I have an incredible nanny / housekeeper that has been with us for 11 years who cooks, grocery shops, now arranges flowers based on some things that she's seen
yes.
on your Instagram.
Oh, I love my flower arranging. I tend to arrange flowers on the farm on a Sunday and that's usually my Sunday post.
Oh, yeah, but it's good.
You know, thank you. I should think of you next Sunday.
That I will never be you.
And well, I will never be you.
And that's okay.
Yeah.
That's how I do it. I say, you know what? This part, I have to delegate it and let other people be much better at it. I'm not really even going to try. I did try and make pad thai once about 3 weeks ago. I went to the grocery store. I mean, just finding my way through the produce department. It was a battle.
Yeah. I think that's really true. Just playing to your strengths.
Yeah.
And just accepting that we can't do it all.
Yes.
And you know, when people say, you know, is it possible to have it all? I say, well, it depends what your all is.
Yes.
You know, for me, it's as long as most things are right most of the time and everybody's happy.
Yeah. And you're doing what you love and you're stimulated, right? Because it's about being able to live every day feeling like there's a purpose. I'm happy doing this. This is making me better and making me evolve, right? And I know that I will never be great at anything that you do.
Oh, that's such a lie.
That's
not true.
Yeah, no, it's true. And I'm completely okay with admiring the skills and talents of other people and just being good at what I do.
Well, I always say, and I'm sure you will probably agree with this, is so much of it is teamwork.
Yes.
And I think when you are a brand founder, and particularly if your name is on something, people can so often assume that it's just you.
Yes.
And, you know, without a great team, things just don't happen.
You're nothing and you're nobody. It's so true, right?
To invest in your team, and that includes your home team.
Yes, home team,
as well as work team. Yeah. Yes. So for the future, more beauty pie, is that where you're focus and energy is going, or do you have yet another brand up your
sleeve? I have one more idea, and when it comes to fruition, I will be back.
Oh my goodness.
Because I think it could be right up your alley, and I'll tell you after we turn this off, because it's a secret, but I think you'll kind of love it.
I'm so looking forward to hearing Marcia. It's such a joy to have you.
It's such a joy to be here and meet you finally.
Thank you so much. Well, that really is all we have time for today. Now, as always, you can find the resources and the links to pretty much everything we've mentioned today in the show at lizellewellbeing.com. I'm going to be asking Marcia for pictures, for links, so it's really going to be a little snippet that you will want to download and take a look at. And don't forget, you can also sign up to our free weekly newsletter. You can subscribe to ensure that the next episode is downloaded safely, and if you fancy it, do please take a moment to leave a review, as it really does help other people find the show. So until the next time we meet, go well. Bye bye.